This is AM. I'm Michael Brissenden. The New South Wales Council of Civil Liberties says it's concerned about Commissioner Dyson Hayden's decision to stay on as head of the Trade Union Royal Commission. Council President Stephen Blanks believes it will have long-term consequences for any of the Royal Commission's findings. The decision has also prompted calls for reforms to the way bias applications are handled by the courts. Labor says it will push ahead with a motion in the Senate calling on the Governor-General to remove the Commissioner. In a moment, we'll be talking to Labor's Senate leader Penny Wong, but first, this report from Michael Edwards.
Dyson Hayden determined it was not the case that a fair-minded lay observer would conclude that he would be incapable of bringing an impartial mind to the work of the Commission. He described his reasoning as legal rather than political. Others aren't so sure it will stand up to public scrutiny. Stephen Blanks is the president of the New South Wales Council of Civil Liberties.
The question here is whether he's correctly read the public mood.
And according to Stephen Blanks, Dyson Hayden's choice to stay on will have long-term consequences for any of the Royal Commission's findings.
There's obviously going to be a high degree of contention about whatever he recommends.
Much of the argument against Dyson Hayden staying on as Commissioner was based on emails exchanged between him and the organisers of the Sir Garfield Barwick Address, which identified it as a Liberal Party event. In his reasons for not disqualifying himself, Mr. Hayden admitted he had no computer and was incapable of sending or receiving emails, and that as a result, he could only read correspondence after it had been printed out. The Attorney General George Brandis has defended Mr. Hayden and says the fact he cannot read emails is not relevant to his position. Labor is now seeking crossbench support to pass a motion in Parliament requesting the Governor-General intervene and remove Dyson Hayden from the Royal Commission. The situation has also prompted calls for a change to the way bias applications are dealt with by the courts. Greg Barnes is a barrister and a spokesman for the Australian Lawyers Alliance.
From the community's perspective, it's hard to see how a judge or royal commissioner can sit in his or her own case, in effect, and judge himself or herself. And that's exactly what's happened here. And I think that this ruling ought to be a catalyst for reform.
The federal government says it's pleased with Dyson Hayden's decision and wants the unions to stop describing the Royal Commission as a witch hunt.
Michael Edwards with that report. We'll be joined now by Senator Penny Wong, Labor's leader in the Senate. Good morning, Senator Wong.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Now, Dyson Hayden says his speech at the Garfield Barwick dinner would have been non-political, and by agreeing to give it, there's no basis to conclude that he's biased against the Labor Party or the unions. He says no fair-minded observer could apprehend that he was intending to raise funds or generate support for the Liberal Party, and that there's no connection between the event and the matters the Royal Commission is examining. Do you reject all of that?
Well, I have to say it's not just me. I mean, I think speak to most people in the street and say to them, an event that was established by the Liberal Party, an event that was established by the Liberal Party, organised by the Liberal Party, not one but two branches of the Liberal Party, which raised funds for the Liberal Party, and then say to them, but actually, do you think it's not a Liberal Party event? I think most people would regard that as ridiculous.
Well, he says there's no connection between the event and the matters the Royal Commission is examining, which is right, isn't it?
Well, even the Prime Minister has said this is a Royal Commission that's about the future of the Labor Party. But I don't think any fair-minded observer looking at this Royal Commission over the time since its inception would regard it as looking at both sides of politics. In fact, people might recall that the original genesis of this Royal Commission was investigating discredited allegations against former Labor Prime Minister Julia Gillard. But leaving all that aside, what we have is a man who was once a judge, now Royal Commissioner handpicked by Tony Abbott, who accepted an invitation to speak at a fundraiser which was organised for the purpose of raising funds for the Liberal Party, who is inquiring into one side of politics. And I think these events really have discredited the Royal Commission.
Well, it is inquiring into union corruption, isn't it? I mean, and it has been doing a pretty good job at uncovering some of that. Four people have been arrested by the AFP, 26 have been referred to state and federal agencies.
And we have said time and time again, there is no place for criminal activity or corruption anywhere, whether it's in the trade union movement or elsewhere. And we have said it is appropriate that you have a joint police task force, a high power task force, to investigate and prosecute crime wherever it occurs.
But not
in relation to these. This commission, I think, has really demonstrated itself to not be an unbiased, impartial operation. And I think that's really been demonstrated in these last days, not just in its genesis, but in its conduct. But most importantly, I don't think anybody, any fair-minded observer that everyone keeps talking about, could look at the invitation that was sent to Mr. Hayden time and time again and say that this could not be described as a Liberal Party event.
So now you'll put a motion to the Senate on Monday seeking his removal. Will you have the numbers?
Well, look, ultimately, that's, as you know, a matter for the crossbench. We are having discussions with us, other senators. We'll continue to do that because we think this is a very important issue. We've got a situation where the Prime Minister has refused to act. Now the Commissioner has declared himself to not be biased and declared that a person, a reasonable observer, would not apprehend that he were biased. I think in those circumstances it is incumbent upon Parliament to act. I don't think the position that the Commissioner has taken really is something out there in the community that is regarded as supportable.
And what are the consequences if the Senate does pass that motion? That then goes directly to the Governor-General, and what happens?
Well, ultimately, this is a matter for the Governor-General. What we will do is we will ask the Senate to agree this address. That's what it's described as. It's a formal message requesting that the Governor-General revoke the Commission's letters patent. And we will see at that point whether the appropriate action will be taken. I do want to make this point. There have been a number of people who are suggesting this is, not an appropriate use of the way in which the Senate operates. This is the way in which the Senate passes an address in reply to the speech at the opening of the Parliament regularly. This is the way in which the Parliament addresses the monarch's representatives, and the advice from the clerk makes it very clear this is an appropriate way for the Senate to express its view. It is regrettable that the Senate has to consider such a resolution given these circumstances, but given that Tony Abbott is refusing to act, that the Attorney General, in fact, makes it clear that one should not act, he should not act, it would be inappropriate for him to act, and the Commissioner has said that attending a Liberal Party event is not problematic, really. It's up to the Parliament to act.
OK, can I turn to another matter where you and the unions are at odds with the government, and that is the China Free Trade Agreement. Yes. Now, the Trade Minister, Andrew Robb, is warning that China will walk away from the deal if Labor votes it down. You're not really going to vote it down, are you?
Well, look, we are up for a trade agreement with China, and I've said that on a number of occasions. And if you look at Labor in government most recently, where we supported Asian engagement in a variety of ways, or the history of the Labor Party, which is one of trade liberalisation over decades, you will see that we are a party that recognises the importance of trade for jobs. However, we want to make sure we've got an agreement that maximises Australian jobs and that minimises the risk of exploitation in the Australian labour market.
But this free trade agreement, as has been pointed out many times, includes exactly the same kind of labour market protections the Labor Party included in free trade agreements that you negotiated when you were in office.
That is utterly incorrect, and it's regrettable that you repeat an incorrect assertion from the government. That is not the case. This agreement goes well beyond any agreement, certainly the Labor government, or in fact other governments, Liberal governments, have done in relation to opening up the Australian labour market.
Well, how do you respond to calls from people like Bob Hawke and Bob Carr who wanted to sign it?
And they are correct to remind all of us of the importance of jobs, of trade to jobs. And as I've said to you, we are up for a trade agreement with China. We're willing to work with the government to find a way through to address these issues. We regret that Andrew Robb has brought an agreement home, which we believe presents risks. We want to find a way through. And what we'd say to Tony Abbott is he should do what John Howard was prepared to do, which is to sit down with the opposition and find a way through. Because the lack of safeguards when it comes to local jobs in this agreement is not only concerning the Labor Party and the trade union movement. It's concerning many people around the country.
Can I just quickly stop on the ask you about the Canning by-election, which is obviously being painted as a big test for Tony Abbott. But it is a pretty big test for Labor and Bill Shorten too, isn't it?
Well, look, this is a by-election in circumstances where we've seen the passing away of the local member. And frankly, history certainly would suggest that it would be extremely difficult for the Labor Party to get a large swing in this seat. In fact, since the war, I think on average, by-elections, again, in terms of swings against the government, are only about 4%. And in fact, it's less than that where the by-election is caused by the passing of a local member. I think
so. You'd be happy with a swing of 2.5%, would you?
No, I'm making the point that historically, you're looking at swings of 2.5 to 4% on average since the war in by-elections in similar circumstances. So that's obviously the norm, the historical norm since that time. We'll be going. We're campaigning hard in Canning. We are campaigning because we think it's a very important test for Tony Abbott, and it's a very important opportunity for Western Australians who are experiencing increasing unemployment.
So what sort of swing would you like to see? What sort of swing would be acceptable to you?
As I said to you, I think that the norm that is to be expected and historical averages is something between 2.5 and 4%. And I think that's an important fact to put on the table. But ultimately, it's up to the people of Canning. We've got a very good candidate in Matt, and we'll be out there prosecuting our arguments. I think what we see is a government that doesn't have a plan for jobs, a government that seems to be focused on fighting itself.
Okay. Senator Penny Wong, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good to speak with you.
That's Labor's leader in the Senate, Penny Wong, there. Well, with repeated warnings against talking out of school to the media having apparently fallen on deaf ears, today a senior government minister is taking a new approach to head off the stream of stories about infighting in the government. Immigration Minister Peter Dutton's turning his political guns on the media organisations who've published or broadcast such stories, accusing Fairfax and the ABC of trying to bring down the government. He says it's high time sections of the media covered policy and left political manoeuvring to the experts. Political reporter Tom Eagledon explains.
There's plenty of genuine policy debate going on in Peter Dutton's immigration portfolio. Take, for example, yesterday's report into living conditions at the Nauru Detention Centre. The Labor chair of the Senate committee which produced it, Alex Gallagher, is calling for security there to be reduced and for increased personal freedom for detainees.
Surely we can give people a bit more autonomy, responsibility for their own welfare, education, cooking and cleaning.
The inquiry heard horrific accounts of sexual abuse, some of it allegedly perpetrated or condoned by guards at the detention centre. Mr Dutton's not for downgrading security there.
Obviously, the number of security staff is based on advice around risk.
But he isn't completely dismissing Senator Gallagher's proposals.
I'm happy to consider any of the recommendations which provide for a better outcome for people. I think anybody would make that statement as a statement of the obvious.
Later today, Mr Dutton will take his place at a meeting of Cabinet in Canberra as the government continues to look for ways to emerge from the deluge of media reports of disharmony at the top. The latest that some of Joe Hockey's Cabinet colleagues are pushing for his removal as Treasurer comes despite repeated warnings to those destabilising the government from within.
I think it would be helpful if some of the commentators in the area, in this space of politics, started reporting on the incidents as opposed to being players themselves. I think there's a huge move by Fairfax at the moment to try and bring the government down. That's fair enough, but they aren't. They aren't supposed to be political players. They're supposed to be objective reporters of the news, and I think many of them have morphed into frustrated politicians themselves. And
well, that was a criticism the Gillard government made often of News Limited. I don't think it did them any favours. Is this really a wise path to go down?
You ask me what I think of the current political environment. I think that's part of the problem. I think regardless of what Tony Abbott does, Fairfax will say it's bad. I think regardless of what Joe Hockey or the Abbott government does, Fairfax will say it's bad.
They're being helped, aren't they, by people who are prepared to leak to them and talk to them in the background?
They're being helped by the ABC as well. There's no question about that. Some elements of the ABC.
I was talking about your colleagues, actually.
Well, and if people want to play mischief, then you know what happens. And that's the consequence that come to parties that aren't unified.
And that's Immigration Minister Peter Dutton there. Austrian police have implemented strict controls at the border to Hungary in an attempt to avoid a repeat of last week's tragedy when the bodies of 71 migrants were found in a truck in a lay-by. Several suspected people smugglers have been arrested and scores of migrants apprehended. Europe correspondent Barbara Miller reports.
At the train station in Budapest, migrants make it clear where they want to end up. Some will board trains here, some will entrust themselves again to people smugglers to try and get from Hungary through Austria and onto Germany. At border crossings, Austrian police are spot-checking cars and trucks to try and clamp down on that potentially deadly business. Those migrants who make it to Germany can find themselves heckled and harassed by Germans who say they should go home, some of whom belong to neo-Nazi groups. German Chancellor Angela Merkel is taking a hard line on the resurgence of an anti-refugee movement.
Was mich anficht ist, dass wir
What bothers me is that we're seeing this hatred, this atmosphere in our country, and my response to it is emphatic. A clear line must be drawn. There can be no excuses, no personal experience, no historical event, nothing at all can justify such behaviour.
European leaders are preparing for an emergency summit on the migrant issue amid deep divisions. Here's the French Prime Minister Manuel Valls on Hungary's insistence on building a 4-metre-high fence on its border to Serbia.
Our responsibility is to ensure that the right to asylum is respected everywhere. We can't get out of it with barbed wire fences.
The fence has also irked the United Nations Refugee Agency. Baba Barloch is a UNHCR spokesman.
What is Hungary trying to prove here? I mean, to keep a refugee and an asylum seeker population at the bay, is this a humanitarian answer to a humanitarian crisis? No, it is not.
France and Germany are pushing for much speedier processing of migrants. The asylum seekers should stay, they say. The economic migrants should be sent home. But determining who belongs to which category is rarely straightforward. And even if just the Syrians were granted asylum, Europe could still be looking at a huge influx. This is Barbara Miller reporting for AM.
It's a sad reality that in the next decade, 32,000 Indigenous Australians are at risk of going blind, suffering from treatable eye conditions. A report released this morning says the eyesight of those people could be saved if the government invested an extra $23 million a year. Eye health researchers believe that's a modest investment. Bridget Brennan reports.
It's estimated that 94% of the vision loss experienced by Indigenous Australians is preventable or treatable. Yet tens of thousands more Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are likely to be blind by 2025. Professor Hugh Taylor is the chairman of the Indigenous Eye Health Unit at the University of Melbourne.
By the time they reach the age of 40 and above, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander adults have six times as much blindness and over three times as much poor vision.
A University of Melbourne report released today says Australia could save money in the long run if the federal government boosts spending on preventing vision loss among Indigenous people. The university commissioned PricewaterhouseCoopers to analyse the government's $40 million spend this year on Indigenous eye health. PwC partner James Van Smeerdijk says to eliminate preventable blindness in Indigenous communities, the government will need to spend an extra $23 million a year for the next 10 years.
If we can return sight to 32,000 people, well, we can free up a lot of people to enter the workforce. The additional $23 million a year, or $227 million for 10 years, is only about 0.5% of the health budget.
Vision degeneration, cataracts and eyesight problems associated with diabetes are the common causes of blindness in Indigenous communities. And the bacterial eye infection trachoma still spreads in many remote communities caused by poor hygiene. Professor Hugh Taylor has dedicated his 40-year career to eliminating preventable blindness in Australia, but he's worried Indigenous people still aren't getting the care they need to see clearly.
There are lots of cracks where people can just fall out of the system. So if somebody is referred to get further treatment, they actually get it, rather than just having the money spent on a wasted visit.
Today, the Indigenous Eye Health Unit will take its report to the Federal Health Department in Canberra.
Bridget Brennan. And to finance now, global stocks are lower on persistent worries about slowing growth in China and rising interest rates in the United States. US stocks have now suffered their worst monthly drop in 3 years. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has ended 0.7% weaker. Oil is higher at $48.46 a barrel, and the Australian dollar is lower this morning at 71.16 US cents. That's AM for today. I'm Michael Brissenden. It's 7:30.